Hey, hey, people of Earth, it's time to enter the Spoilerverse via our secret portal at the exclusive Arctic Club in beautiful downtown Seattle with our hosts John and Kenrick. Welcome to Spoiler Country.
Hey, if you're listening to our show for the first time and you're on one of the social medias that we're on, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of those kinds of things, you should always check us out on Spoilerverse.com. But if you want to keep up with our latest episodes, you should bring out your smartphone, get into your favorite podcatcher, find Spoiler Country, and hit subscribe. Then you'll get all our new stuff.
And if you want to reach out to us, you can do that in two ways. You can call us, leave us a voicemail at 707-656-2080. Again, 707-656-2080. Or you can shoot us an email at spoilercountry@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Spoiler Country. I'm Kenner Green. Johnny is off still. And today on the show, well, it's Edo Goldberg, isn't it? If you don't know who Edo is, you're about to find out because he is part of the awesome ensemble cast of Snowpiercer, which is on TV, one of the most amazing shows right now because we really are living in a golden age. Edo stopped by, spoke with our very own Melissa Sercha, and they had a wonderful conversation. So why don't you sit back, relax, and let's go ahead and listen to Edo in his own words.
This is Spoiler Country, and I'm Melissa Sercha. Today on the show, I'm excited to chat with one of the stars of the hit show Snowpiercer, actor Edo Goldberg. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. How are you doing today?
I'm good, and nice to meet you. I'm good, thanks. Yeah, in Vancouver, we're just about to start shooting season three. My first day should be sometime next week, so I'm excited to A, be out of quarantine, and to be on set soon.
Yeah, I bet. I'm excited that there is a season three. That's good news.
Yeah, it is good news.
Yeah, well, let's dive right in to Snowpiercer. I am a super fan, but for those who aren't familiar with this show, tell our listeners just a little bit about, you know, what it's about and who you play.
Okay, Snowpiercer is set in this kind of post-apocalyptic world where our scientists try to fix the global warming problem, and this whole effort backfired on them and the world froze over. There was a few people that could see that this was coming, and one of them, Wilford, was adamant this was going to happen. And in that time, he built a super train and a track around the planet. And this is a story of the last remnants of humanity and, you know, the fate of, I guess, revolving around the planet until the ice thaws.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an incredible show. You know, the sets are fantastic. The cast is incredible. There's so many different nuances and different like sub storylines going on. Mm-hmm. You know, with the main plot. And what's interesting is with your character, I feel like we get to see just a little bit about him, you know, every episode, just find out a little bit, you know, right, more about him. He's, you know, an engineer. He's in a relationship with Melanie. He's on Wilford's shit list for some reason, you know? So what do you think Ben's motivation is, and how did he like kind of end up in this mess?
I think to begin with, you know, Bennett's motivation. So yeah, so I guess I play one of the head engineers of the train, and I'm often driving the train. And, you know, for people who, I'm not sure how much I can say, but I guess, because I don't know at what stage people are coming into the show, but, you know, I am, I guess many years ago, we joined the inhabitants of this train 7 years after this disaster happened, and the train had to leave. So it's kind of been going around the planet for 7 years now. And I guess Ben is, you know, his main motivation was to secure a place for humanity to survive. Yeah. Not that it was his brainchild and that's what he came up with, but his priorities were, that was his priorities. And it was to kind of take control from someone else, which we'll find out later in the show, and because he thought this person was, you know, a complete psychopath and, you know, wouldn't be the best option to lead humanity into existence. And his, I guess his, you know, partner in crime in that endeavor is Melanie Cavill's character. And, I think that, you know, she is, you know, she's probably more at the forefront of this idea, and he is someone that is kind of constantly supporting her. And I think throughout that, to kind of what romance they have, or what, you know, like that, I kind of also believe that some part of it is just because they are in this situation, and, you know, they are maybe at the right place at the right time for each other. So I think I think to answer the right question, to answer your question is, you know, to keep the wheels of the train turning, you know, to keep the train moving forward is, I think, my priority. And that kind of should be everybody's priority, because, you know, when the train stops, it stops. So regardless of the suffering and regardless of the like moral issues, his kind of standpoint is like, technically, mechanically, the train needs to keep moving.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting point you brought up. Would, you know, these two characters even be romantically involved if not for this situation, right? Because it could just be that, or, you know.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. I would hazard a guess that it's probably not. But I mean, you could say that about so many relationships, you know, like, would these people be romantically involved if they weren't in kind of like in that kind of, you know, the vicinity of each other in that sense. And I feel like in the process of building this thing and realizing Mr. Wilford's vision, they were probably privy to a lot of information. They probably dealt with a lot of challenges together, ups and downs. And I think they were probably there for each other. And then possibly when the train took off and, you know, Melanie as, you know, I guess like, you know, like the front of house of the train, having to keep this kind of A, persona, B, mood, and, you know, the appearances as if things were okay. I think maybe Bennett became someone that she could be real with in the first season. And I think that in the second season, she finds that in a lot of other characters. But when we meet them, that's possibly a big reason of why they, you know, they kind of share that closeness.
Yeah. And I think we get the sense, you know, right away from your character that he is maybe one of the only people she can trust. You know, everyone else seems to have an ulterior motive, whereas your character is sort of like, this is who I am. These are my cards on the table, you know?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think it's because other characters' ulterior motives are either survival or power. And they're both very human desires, you know, one being very instinctual and one being a result of, you know, maybe kind of dealing with the issues and stuff, and needing that status. But maybe that's something that they don't kind of need from each other, and it's just about, you know, it's just about maybe even keeping the mission going.
Yeah, absolutely. And many of your scenes are pretty isolated, you know, you're mostly in the engine room, and then, you know, without giving away too much, there are scenes where eventually you interact with the other passengers. You know, what was that like? Were you like, I'm free, I get to come out and actually interact with the other actors?
Yeah, I mean, I mostly, it sucked not being involved in all the fighting.
Yeah.
So there was a big chunk of time when we would walk around the studios, and especially in the first season, I would always be walking around the studios because the studios are so big and there were so many cars built. There's only a few cars that kind of actually look different from the outside. The engine, the way the engine is built, I mean, it's very, you know, it's very obvious it's an engine because of the window and the shape of the window. But a lot of the cars are boxes, you know, from the outside. Yeah. So for a big part of the first season, I was just aimlessly walking around the studio lost, not knowing how to get back or, you know, not knowing how to get out of the structure. But, and then you would see there was a big chunk of time where I'd walk past Mickey or David and they were, or like everyone was covered in blood. And I'm like, wow, that looks like a lot of fun. So yeah, there was that. But I also kind of feel that there was something nice to having almost like my office. And I feel like that's something that a lot of the cast didn't have necessarily. You know, like obviously like Alison Wright, she was very much in like first class and you know, being around that kind of that restaurant area must have been amazing. I love that set. It's so cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and always filled with such amazing characters. But I loved having my office in a sense and having knowing where props were and things were there for kind of us to play with and stuff. And it's just, you know, it's such a cool set. All kind of modeled on like the Eurostar train. It's huge. It weighs like 6 tons and took ages built, and it's great. It's really a lot of fun doing that stuff. It's kind of makes your job pretty easy.
Yeah, no, it's incredible to watch. I mean, there's those steampunk elements, you know, that are in there. Yeah. And, you know, it's futuristic, but kind of old world at the same time. And when I was talking to another cast member of yours, Aaron Glenane, and he was talking about all the little details that you can't even see. Yeah, he's so great. You can't even see on camera really, but like little notes in the marketplace and things like that. And I'm sure for you as an actor, that probably really helps you get into character.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's great. And it helps you get into character. And it's really, you know, when we first started working on the show, it was such a push to get going. And, you know, they were constantly building sets as we were working and as we started filming. And just, you know, art department, they killed it. Really kind of like, they were just always building shit. And it was kind of, you know, yeah, I mean, really lucky that we had this incredible crew and still have this incredible crew on the show. It was a real effort to get this train built. You know, it's a big train. It needs to look like a big train. And you need to have all of these cars in place. But then it comes down to these little details. So it's like everything's been thought of. It's really cool.
Yeah. Now, what's that like filming those scenes when, you know, you're driving the train, you're navigating and, you know, things are happening. There's like, you know, something's going wrong. And I know as an actor, you're looking at a green screen or a blue screen or whichever, but how do you kind of react to that? How do you prepare yourself to pretend, you know, that you're looking at this crazy landscape?
Well, you know, it's actually not as straightforward as you would think. And because I, you know, I'm like the train driver in a sense, and I deal with a lot of scientific stuff. So a lot of my dialogue is, you know, is information and it's kind of, I'm relaying to, you know, the characters around me and to the audience, like what's happening, what's wrong with the train, where the train's going, how much time we have left to accomplish stuff. So there is a lot that some of the scenes, the intensity of the scenes relies on that information. So even though you want to go crazy and do all this stuff, you actually have to be quite still and quite calm. And I think ultimately you feel the pressure to kind of do all this stuff to kind of build what's written, but really, you know, effects that they have you, you know, they're on that, they're doing that stuff for you. You don't need to do that. You actually need to kind of keep it together and keep quite controlled and do a lot less than you think. So yeah, that was trial and error for sure.
Yeah. And your character does seem to be pretty calm for most of, you know, most of the time. I mean, there's a lot of different characters that are going from one extreme to the other, but your character seems to sort of stay in his zone. Do you think that's because of his engineering background and he's like this analytical, technical person and not as much emotional?
Yeah, because I think that is it's exactly that. You got it there. It's, you know, I can tell someone what's going on the track or where the train's heading or what angle we're leaning to, but you know, he is, instead of flipping out, he's doing calculations how to counterbalance that. And So it's something that he might be feeling a lot of anxiety and tension. But I think here's the way he deals with that is doing the calculations to get us out of that mess. So that's probably why he's as calm as he is. He's definitely a lot calmer than I am in life. I would have lost my shit if I was him. But he's, you know, that's maybe why he's one of the train drivers. You know, it's maybe why he's one of the head engineers.
Right.
He's able to apply himself in that way.
Yeah. And why, you know, Melanie probably relies on him and trusts him so much because she knows he's not going to flip out on her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I watched, you know, this week's episode was quite the episode. And I know we can't, you know, for people listening, if they don't want to tune, you know, if they want to watch the show and they haven't seen it, we won't go too deep into it. And, but, you know, it was really intense. And there were some really intense scenes between you and Leighton and you and Mr. Wilford. Were you expecting, you know, because do you guys get the scripts ahead of time or is it a week by week?
Yeah, you know, we usually get the scripts. So we film, so we get directors come on and they do two episodes at once, and sometimes a director comes on and does one episode, but it's usually two. So, you know, you could be shooting, let's say we talk about episodes 7 and 8, so that would have been a block, and maybe was it, yeah, 6, well, it doesn't matter, let's say, so 2 episodes 7 and 8, a director would come along and you could be filming an episode from a scene from episode 7, and then you could be running to get changed and then filming an episode from episode 8.
Oh, wow.
So you have the, you know, they give you both of those scripts ahead of time. Sometimes it comes down to the wire and it's a day or two before, you know, before we are get to go, because, you know, I think there is a strength to kind of writing as to kind of what's going on. I feel like it's a really good way to kind of write, you know, and sometimes we get the scripts like way in advance. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't think it's not, how should I say, it's sometimes it's nice to get stuff in the last minute, and sometimes it's nice to have like ages with the material. So I think that's just part of, you know, part of working as an actor, you know. But mostly our scripts are given to us with enough time, and you get to kind of to prep your stuff. So to answer your question, God, I went off such a tangent.
No, that's great.
to answer your question, yeah, it was frustrating that episode, and, you know, to know that that's what was going to happen. And but it was cool to, you know, it was cool to spend time with Leighton and to explain to him a little bit of how things work back of house. And then unfortunately, you know, we had that whole situation with the God module.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a crazy scene. And, you know, you're all running around and everyone's yelling. It was very chaotic. I think it was like one of the most chaotic scenes that I've seen your character kind of thrust into the middle of. Was that, I bet that was really fun to shoot though.
Yeah, it is, you know, because once you, you know, obviously it takes a while to kind of figure it out, because, you know, you can read a scene and kind of make sense of it at home, but then when you get to the physical geographical space, you're like, oh, wait a second, this is not going to work. Or and then you kind of, everyone has to find it, and then by a certain point it becomes a dance where everyone feels really free and you're just kind of all going for it, and it's, and that's always a lot of fun, and it's fun when everyone's kind of like in sync and doing their thing together. Yeah, it's always fun to be, you know, to be with, you know, with the big crew and kind of to do those scenes, as much as it is to do a scene with, you know, like a couple of people where it's a bit more intimate and, you know, you're kind of discovering a bit more about each other. But, you know, this world is so big, and I think it's really rewarding for the audience when a lot of the characters are in shot at the same time. I think there's something really exciting about that.
Yeah, it is. It's fun to see like the different characters interact with each other, because we see them separate for so many episodes. And then when you see two characters or three come together that have not been in maybe a scene together before or for a while, it's kind of exciting. You're like, okay, what's going to happen? You know, how are they going to play off each other?
Yeah. And I think there's something nice about that. You know, there's something nice about letting that breathe and kind of jumping into these stories every now and then and not having just one particular character like be on screen all the time. I think that's it's a testament to like good writing, and it's a testament to, you know, and like just kind of like honoring the reality of the fact that there's just loads of characters. Like let's see what they're doing.
Yeah. And so you've got the season finale coming up here on March 28th. Two-hour season finale. Is there anything you can kind of hint at? I mean, without obviously not giving any details away, but just what can we expect?
I would normally say yes, but I don't... I feel like there is huge lows and huge highs. And it's like, it's, you know, it's exciting and it really builds up, you know, to like this kind of crescendo. And it's really action-y. I think it's really exciting. And I think people are going to get a real kick out of it. And it's sci-fi and it's colorful and we get to kind of spend some time with everyone, you know? So it's cool. I think people are going to really dig it.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm definitely obviously rooting for, you know, Snowpiercer to get out of this one. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Thanks. I was speaking to someone before and they were saying that there's like a huge like Wilford following as well, like people who want to see like the crazier side of things take over.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think I've talked to anyone that has that. But I mean, I guess, you know, there's got to be fans on both sides, right?
Right.
That's great. And I'm sure there's that theory too going around about the Willy Wonka theory. Have you seen that?
No, tell me.
So if you Google it, there's this fan theory that Snowpiercer is actually sort of like a continuation of Willy Wonka, that Wilford is like Willy Wonka gone mad.
Okay, I will check that out.
Yeah, there's like a deep dive. You'll go down a rabbit hole.
I'll do that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on today. This has been really fun.
Thank you for having me.
You're great on the show, and I look forward to seeing the finale and season 3, of course, as well. And for everyone listening, you can watch Snowpiercer Monday nights on TNT, but you can also stream season 1 on HBO Max, and I'm sure season 2 will be on there shortly since the finale is coming up soon. So yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you again for having me. Great fun talking to you.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
And we're back.
That's right. We are back. Back in the saddle again. Well, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed that as much as we did making it for you. And if you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, you got to go check out spoilerverse.com, because at spoilerverse.com we have a plethora. Plethora is such a snobbish word.
I like it though. it's a good word.
we have an obscene amount of interviews with amazing directors and artists of all walks of life, and editors and writers, and oh my god, are you a lover of comic books like we are? And then there's so many amazing people from the comic book world over at spoilerverse.com, and I highly implore you to go there and check it out.
Yeah, and while you're there, you can check out all the other podcasts on our network, like Bridges of the Geekdoms and Funny Book Forensics and Haphazard Adventures and Nerds from the Crypt and so many more.
Misery Point Radio.
Episodes all the time. Misery Point Radio has got a ton of great stuff out there. Go check all of them out. And check out all of the reviews and previews and articles we have going up every single day for you, every day on spoilerverse.com for you to check out, to read, and to love, and to like, and to comment. We have a store link. If you want to help support the site, you can do it two ways. One, go to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/spoilercountry, or go to our store link in the middle of the site there and get a t-shirt, a face mask, a hoodie, something. Look fly as hell and help support the site when you do that, because we get a dollar or two. And, you know, maybe you want to talk to us. If you do, you can do it, you know, obviously on all the socials, but if you go to scpod.us/discord, you can join our public Discord server and come chat with us all day long.
I couldn't say it better myself, dude.
There you go.
You just mouthed out a ton of information at once. And really, I hope you guys enjoy what you're hearing, because we're working our butts off to bring it to you.
We are.
I guess there's only one left thing. One left thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with it. There's only one left thing left to do.
What's that?
In an oceans of podcasts, we are Cthulhu, as Cthulhu compels you to do. Open the mind.
And read more.